Hi, I'm Arch.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And welcome to another Magic the Gathering EDH episode from your Commanders of the Coast.
In today's episode, we will be discussing all four of the new Rivals of Ixalan multicolored legendary creatures. But before that, let's talk about the pre-release. Both Arch and I, we both got pre-release packs, or boxes, and believe it or not, I pulled a Zakama. Pretty cool, huh?
Must be nice. Must be nice.
I actually got an Atali, too, as my promo. What'd you get?
Oh, well, I pulled a Captain's Hook.
Yeah, cool.
You know what? I actually got two of them.
Well, one for both hands.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
What cards are you planning to use for any of your commander decks?
Well, a card I pulled was a Galta, Primal Hunger. That is a 10 green. So it's a legendary creature. He's an elder dinosaur, so you know he's got wisdom. And Galta, Primal Hunger cost X less to cast, where X is the total number of creatures you control. He comes in with trample and is a big old 12-12.
That costs a lot, though. What are you going to do?
It does cost a lot, I have to agree, but just because of its actual integrated passive, the type of deck I like to run is +1/+1 counters, so a lot of my creatures get buffed really quick. This would go great in it, because right now I'm running Primeval Protector, who is a 10 and a green, and he is a creature avatar, a giant 10-10, and he costs 1 less to cast for each creature your opponents control, and when he enters the battlefield, put +1/+1 counters on each other creature you control. Now, that synergizes really well with my +1/+1 counter deck, but this really is super reliant on my enemies casting out a lot of creatures just to lower his casting costs, where opposed to, you know, Galta, who can just come in really cheap as long as I got someone really strong, and that's all reliant on myself. And the fact that he does have trample, too, does really help.
Yeah, it's easier to do it when you're on a +1/+1 counter build, because it's not the amount of creatures you have, it's just how big you can get a creature to become.
Yes. Well, what are you going to be adding to your decks?
I actually pulled one of those flip lands.
Oh, looks like you had all the glorious pulls, huh?
Yeah, you know, well, I pulled a Path of Metal, which is a red and a white enchantment, legendary enchantment. And when Path of Metal enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to each creature that doesn't have first strike, double strike, vigilance, or haste. So, you know, that's kind of lackluster. You know, I don't think that's going to be the main reason I'll be running it. But I do like the other ability when it flips over. You have to attack with at least 2 creatures that have first strike, double strike, vigilance, or haste. And then you can transform it, and it turns into Mitzali, Tower of Triumph.
I love these flip lands.
Yeah, so it's a legendary land. And it taps to any color. So it's a legendary land, and it adds 1 mana of any color to your mana pool when you tap it. But also, you could pay 1 in a red and tap it, and it will deal 2 damage to each opponent. It's not too powerful, but I do like the last activated ability, where it's 2 in a white, and you tap it, and you choose a creature at random that attack this turn. Destroy that creature.
Pretty much like a get out of jail free card, I guess I would say. In case anyone wanted to attack you, they would lose something.
Yeah, it's bad that it's random, but at the same time, you know, people probably wouldn't want to attack you if you just say, hey, look, if you attack me, I could possibly destroy your commander if your commander's attacking.
That's true.
It's very anti-Voltron, too, because you want one card to be really huge, and this one, if they attack you with that one commander card that's like a 21-21, you know, you could just destroy that card.
Yep, and all that time you've spent building it just goes to waste.
And even most of the time, you know, they put those commanders with Hexproof or Shroud, but this one that says a creature at random, so it's not like you're targeting it.
Yeah, so pretty much any creature is subjective to dying, is what you're saying.
Yeah, even it bypasses Hexproof and Shroud.
You know, one creature I wouldn't want to die would be Zakama, Primal Calamity. 6 red, green, white. It's a legendary creature, elder dinosaur, and as we spoke, they're very smart because they're elderly. Has vigilance, reach, and trample. When Zakama enters the battlefield, if you cast it, untap all lands you control.
You could almost cast this for free. As long as you don't use mana rocks.
Yeah, you literally can. But let's continue it. He has more to him. Two in a red, he'll deal 3 damage to a target creature. Two in a green, he'll destroy target artifact or enchantment. Two in a white, you gain 3 life. And he's a 9/9.
Yeah, so, you know, he's a 9/9 dinosaur for 9 mana, which is pretty easy to get in Commander. But when he's your actual commander, it's a bit tougher because everybody knows.
Everyone knows the mayhem that's about to be brought upon them.
He has these 3 activated abilities, which you can use right away because you're untapping your lands when you cast them. There's a lot of damage you can do without even him attacking. Like, you can destroy a few creatures. You can destroy an artifact or enchantment. And you know how hard it is to get enchantments out of here.
Very hard.
Or you can gain 3 life if you're in a pickle.
I would like to say that the last skill seems very lackluster, but in a game of Commander, when it's like dropping down to the wire, that 3 health can really go a long way. Or, you know, maybe that 9 health or 12.
Or if you just build around it and make a life gain deck, then you could, it'll be a bigger difference. But let's talk about the pros and cons of Zakama. The pros, you know, it's a huge board presence, even on his own, without having any other creatures out on the board. He's doing so much in one card.
Yeah, this card demands a lot of attention because of how nasty it immediately gets just by being on the board. And what I mean by that is it draws up to our next pro here, which is politics. Immediately when he's dropped down, everyone's going to want to be your friend.
Yeah, everybody's going to be on their knees, hoping you don't destroy something or trying to make deals with you. You know, it doesn't seem like a political card, but since you can choose the things to destroy, and it doesn't, and it's any opponent, it's anybody, even your own, if you want to, for some reason, you can choose to destroy things, and you could either make friendships or enemies, or you could just not care about everyone else because they're going to be at your mercy.
Yeah, and that leads us to our next point on the pros here, and that's versatility. He has so many options on what he can do immediately after he is dropped because you now have all these abilities at your disposal.
Yeah, what's cool about activated abilities is that you can use them right away without haste, and you can use them on your opponent's turn. What would happen now is if you're the next person going, he's probably not going to want to play an artifact or enchantment, or one that's like a high target artifact or enchantment, because that's just going to be the prime target for Zakama. He's going to eat that right up.
So yeah, it really disturbs your current game plan, and it makes you have to think how to play around this guy, or if you can find someone who can get rid of him so you can continue on with your path to victory.
Well, you know, that's kind of just going on to the cons of this card, is if people band together, they can do that, especially if he's your commander. He's a very high cost commander, 9 mana, so you probably won't get him until, I mean, if you're very lucky, you could get him turn 5 or 6, but maybe on average, every game, you'll get him at least turn 7 or 8, which by then, everyone else has an established board state. They have the lands to counter him. So the high mana cost really, it really hinders you because it shows everyone what you're going to do next. When they see that you have 9 mana and it's your turn, it gets really predictable.
And that leads us to our next point, which is predictability. If you're playing Zakama and someone has, you know, 2 blue left, they're playing, you know, here you go, I'm going to throw out my Zakama and, well, could be countered. Could be countered instantly. Someone could just be waiting for you and just destroy your entire game plan, depending on how much they love you or hate you.
And that's a huge blowout if someone does that, because you already tapped your land and he's never entered the battlefield because it doesn't resolve. So you just wasted your turn. You're not getting that refund. Someone used 2 mana, or sometimes even 1 mana, and you use 9 and you have nothing to show for it. So he's very predictable on what people can do when you're playing against a Zakama, is when you see that they're getting to that point, you never want to tap all your lands every turn. You want to always, even if you don't have anything in your hand, you just want to bluff.
Mind games plays a big role in Magic. But anyways, let's go ahead and talk about how we built Zakama here. And as we talked about, one of his cons was the high cost, so something that we focused on was the ramp game. Especially when you're dabbling in green, you have to take advantage of the ramp that it just brings with it.
All right, we have Ordeal of Nylea as our first ramp card. It's 1 in the green, an enchantment aura, so you can attach this to one of your early creatures. And it says, enchant creature. Whenever enchanted creature attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Then if it has three or more +1/+1 counters on it, sacrifice Ordeal of Nylea. When you do sacrifice Ordeal of Nylea, search your library for up to two basic land cards and put them onto the battlefield tap. Then shuffle your library. So what this is good for is, one, it's an investment. You're not going to get those lands right away. But early on, you can make a really small creature stronger while at the same time eventually ramping.
You know, this card is one of the more overlooked green cards in my opinion, as I don't really tend to see this one very much in a lot of the green decks, just because of, as you said, it doesn't immediately give you anything really of anything beneficial aside from the +1/+1. But it will ramp up really quick. I've seen the madness it does, because I actually run this in one of my decks as well.
Yeah, what's cool about that is that if they already have the counters on that creature, and then you put this on, it'll just automatically be sacrificed, because it says if it has three or more counters. So if, say, you already had three counters on a creature, you're basically just playing one in green to get two forest or two other lands onto the battlefield, which is, you know, that's a one mana discount compared to Kadama's Reach. Or I'll cultivate.
Which, you know, both are good cards. Don't get us wrong.
No, we put that in here too. But we don't want to highlight those cards. You guys know about those cards. So let's talk about another ramp card that doesn't get talked about much. I mean, I've heard about other podcasts talking about it, but it's still not really mentioned as often as a cultivate or a Kadama's Reach. And it's probably because it hasn't been reprinted in a while, and that's Sky Shroud Claim. It's 3 in a green. It's a sorcery. And you search your library for up to 2 forest cards and put them into play. Then shuffle your library. Notice it didn't say tapped.
So that is an immediate power spike to you.
Yeah, so that almost means it costs 2 mana only. Because it's 3 in a green, but you're getting 2 forests, which you can immediately use. So it's basically 1 in a green for 2 forests. The only thing is you have to wait till turn 4, but in terms of actually ramping, it's much better. So we talked about how we want a lot of ramp, but we can't just keep ramping without, you know, putting creatures out there. So might as well attach the ramp to the creatures. One of the ramp creature cards I like is Yavimaya Elder. It's 1/2 green. It's a creature human druid that's a 2/1, which, you know, its stats don't really matter. But when Yavimaya Elder dies, you may search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, reveal them, and put them into your hand. If you do, shuffle your library. It also has an activate ability of 2 generic mana, sacrifice Yavimaya Elder, and draw a card. So these don't put the forest straight to your battlefield, but when you have a hand with no lands in it, it's good to have that 2 extra.
Yeah, you know, this old man tree, Yavimaya Elder, respectfully, if you were to pair him up with Ordeal of Nylea, this old man tree becomes a giant threat on the board. I mean, not so much giant, but early game-wise, he can become really nasty. And when you decide to finally do something about him, you'll end up sacking him, and you'll get your lands, and you get a draw card. It's a win-win.
We really like to focus on the early game with Zakama because, you know, he is a late game, or I guess mid-game creature. So we want to, you know, incorporate things like Yavimaya Elder that can soak up damage. And so that's why he also decided to go onto another route, or a different type of ramping, would be Landfall. You're ramping anyways, so we figured, why not use the Landfall triggered abilities to, you know, help out your early game, so you get more value from things like Sky Shroud's Claim. But why don't you talk about the Landfall cards we have in here?
Yeah, so the first Landfall card we have is Colony Heart Expedition. It is a 1 and a green. It's an enchantment, and it reads Landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a quest counter on Colony Heart Expedition. Remove 3 quest counters and sack it. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards and put them onto the battlefield tap. Then shuffle your library.
This is reminiscent of, you know, the Ordeal of Nylea, where you're not getting the forest right away. You're not cashing out your check right away. You're waiting until you can get those quest counters. But, you know, it's fine. Like, that's what you're going to be doing anyways, is playing lands. And you can get this out pretty early and play a cultivate or something, and it would automatically, you probably already sacrifice it and get an extra 2 basic lands. So how does a cultivate 4/4 land sound. That sounds pretty good.
That sounds really great. It's really all about investment here, because, I mean, you're already playing a late-game commander. This just really helps you survive getting to that point, or it'll help you get there much faster. No, I'll just leave it. All right. So another card that we've added in here is Undergrowth Champion. He's a 1 green-green. He's a creature elemental. He's a 2/2. If damage would be dealt to Undergrowth Champion while it has a +1/+1 counter on it, prevent the damage, remove a +1/+1 counter from Undergrowth Champion. His landfall ability is whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Undergrowth Champion. Now, a 2/2 doesn't really sound that crazy, you know, for a 3 cost, but it's just the fact that he has that landfall where he gets buffed up periodically throughout the game, just every land you place down, more +1/+1, he can get really nasty real quick.
Yeah, and the fact that you can remove a counter from him instead of taking the damage means he could really stick to the board.
Honestly, when you look at it, he's a great card. Another card we threw in here is Lotus Cobra. It is a 1 and a green. Creature Snake. It has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. It is a 2/1, but that's not really the big picture here. The fact that he gives you 1 extra mana is quite scary.
Yeah, every time a land comes in, you can just get an extra mana to your mana pool. He's not a threat to anybody, so it's not like he's going to get destroyed by anything. Obviously, you could chump block with him, but with him on the board, when you're getting lands just dropping onto your board, you get free mana at the same time.
So now that we've got landfall introduced here, we also needed another mechanic here to really get our gears going. And so we decided to throw in an untapping as one of our mechanics here.
Yeah, untapping is really powerful in this deck. We decided to use it not for untapping creatures or artifacts, but actually untapping your own lands. So, you know, we want those lands because since you could put Zakama out and untap your lands, use its abilities, and you could figure out a way to untap your lands again to keep spamming those abilities. So all of a sudden, Zakama is, you know, he could be this 3-damage pinger or artifact destroying machine.
And that's what's scary about Zakama, is that the fact that he untaps all his lands, and if you throw in this untapping mechanic to go with it, it just makes him even more scary. It just makes you an even more of a higher threat, and it really allows you to keep your seat at the throne.
So the first card we chose in this section is Bear Umbra. It's 2 and 2 green. It's an enchantment aura, and you enchant a creature. The enchanted creature gets +2/+2, which is a good bonus, and has, whenever this creature attacks, untap all lands you control. So what's cool about this is it doesn't have to do combat damage like most techs say. You just have to say, I'm going to attack with this. And then you can untap every land you control and continue your onslaught. Another cool thing about Bear Umbra is it has Totem Armor, and that's when if enchanted creature would be destroyed, instead remove all damage from it and destroy this aura.
It's like it's pretty much like a chump block in its own sense.
Yeah, you get an extra life.
Yeah, this would be great on Zakama.
Yeah, and he'd be an 11/11 too, which you just need 2 hits on someone, and that's commander damage. So also we put Nature's Will in here. It's 2 and 2 green. It's an enchantment that says whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, tap all lands that player controls, and untap all lands you control. We were focusing on untapping our own lands, but if you can tap all their lands too, why not?
What we're trying to do here is establish a dominance by allowing us to have a giant mana pool with the untapping mechanic, but at the same time, if you can tap your opponents, oh man, you're going to be so hated, but it's going to feel so great.
Tap that blue player. That's all I'm going to say. All right, our last card in this section is Seedborn Muse. It's a 3 and 2 green creature spirit. It's a 2/4, but it says untap all permanents you control during each other player's untap step. So all of a sudden, during your opponent's turns, which they allow you to untap your own permanents, which includes lands.
So to go along with our enchantments that we have with this untapping mechanic, this is really good because it now pressures all of your opponents that pretty much the board can possibly be cleared if you have Zakama out on the field with this card.
Yeah, once it makes one cycle through the whole board, there's no reason for any other creature or artifact to be up still. So it just keeps protecting Zakama and keeps people down. And now your opponents don't know which to get rid of first, the Seedborn Muse or the Zakama. Either way, you're going to have an advantage.
So this leads us to our last section, which is Tap for Mana. The first card we have here is Mirari's Wake. That's a 3 green and a white. It's an enchantment, and creatures you control get +1/+1. Whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced.
So this is kind of like pseudo-ramp. You're ramping, but not really getting the land. But it's still the same thing. You're doubling your lands, basically.
Think of doubling season for lands.
Plus the +1/+1 counters on your creatures doesn't hurt.
So this, again, is just going to help us further get through that early game struggle we have because of Zakama's high casting cost, as we said. Another card we added to help out with this is Mana Reflection. That is a 4 green-green. It's an enchantment. If you tap a permanent for mana, it produces twice as much that mana instead.
So this is the same thing as Mirari's Wake, except it doesn't have the creatures you control get +1/+1 buff. But the more of these effects we have, I feel the better. The more mana you can tap.
To add on to that, the cool thing about this is if you had Mirari's Wake already on the board, when you tap that land for 2 mana, with Mana Reflection, it now becomes 4 mana, so this can get really disgusting really fast. But you know what? You know we had to add more, so another one that we added was Zendikar Resurgent. It's a 5 green-green. It's an enchantment. Whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. Whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card.
Yeah, we're just trying to stack on these effects. The extra card draw, though, that's a good bonus that I'm not going to complain about.
Like, who's going to say, no, I don't want card draw?
Me.
Okay, well, yeah, having that extra card draw is always a great advantage for any deck in any commander game. So when you add all of these together, this really tackles the cons that Zakama has, and this should help you out through that early game. And it'll help you bring out Zakama a lot faster, just giving you more board dominance. To summarize, Zakama's high casting cost makes it really hard to get through that early game, but luckily you dabble in green, so take advantage of the early green ramp. The next commander that we have on our list is Kumena, Tyrant of Orozca.
Kumena, Tyrant of Orozca is a 1, a green, and a blue. It's a 2/4 Merfolk Shaman. What it does is you can tap another untapped Merfolk you control, and Kumena becomes unblockable this turn. His second ability is you tap 3 untapped Merfolk you control, and you can draw a card. And lastly, you could tap 5 untapped Merfolk you control, and put a +1/+1 counter on each Merfolk you control. There's a lot of things you can do with this card.
Yeah, that is a lot. He can be unblockable, he can draw a card, and he can also put +1/+1 counters on all the Merfolk you have for a 3 cost.
Yeah, that's okay. That's actually one of our pros. So our first pro here is it is a very low CMC card. It's only 3 mana, and you can get him out very early and start, you know, doing his tapping and untapping shenanigans. He's also very versatile because you could either choose to go, you know, the Voltron mode where you make him unblockable and just out of nowhere do 21 damage to people. You can draw cards when you tap 3 Merfolk, and you'll always have a card draw engine built into your commander. Or you can go the token route and just go wide and have a lot of little creatures on the board who just keep getting bigger each turn, sometimes multiple times a turn.
And Kumena's in easy colors. So you got the early game ramp, as we talked about, in green, and you've got a lot of control with the blue. The colors are easy, but unfortunately, due to the abilities that Kumena has, you have to go tribal.
You know, some people won't see that as a con, but in terms of how you can build this commander, you really have to just go Merfolk tribal. That's the only route you'd probably want to take. Also, you know, there's a lot of setup with this card. You're going to need creatures on the board for him to make use of his abilities. If he's the only creature on the board, there's not much you can do with that. Speaking of Merfolk Tribal, that's actually the first section we have in this deck list. The first card in this section is Miro Rejury. It's 2 and a blue, and it's a Merfolk Soldier. It says other Merfolk creatures you control get +1/+1. So he's buffing up all your creatures already. Let's just be honest, you're going to have only Merfolk, so he's going to be giving everyone a 1/1. Whenever you cast a Merfolk spell, you may tap or untap a target permanent.
So for a 3 casting cost, you now have a tapping and an untapping engine built into Miro Rejury.
Yeah, whenever you play any of your creatures, you can untap another one of yours to be able to tap him again with Kumena's passive if you want. Or another cool thing you can do is just tap a target blocking creature and, you know, go ahead and go face with all of your merfolks.
Well, the cool thing about it is it's not limiting you to target merfolk stuff, so you could target your own soul ring if you wanted to.
Yeah, you could do that again, and you're able to just get a free 2 mana out of it. Speaking of cards that want to be tapped, Follow Sage wants to be tapped. It's a 3 blue merfolk wizard, a 2/2, and whenever Follow Sage becomes tapped, you may draw a card. So when you're using Kumena's ability to tap this guy, you're automatically just drawing a card.
Yeah, or you can even use that Miro Rigiri we just talked about.
And you could keep untapping him and tapping him again just for...
Oh man, the card draw just sounds so nice right now.
Yeah, you could draw a ton of cards off of Follow Sage. Another creature that would really be useful in this Merfolk Tribal deck is Kopala, Warden of Waves. It's 1 and 2 blue. It's a legendary creature, so you could make a commander deck with her. It's a 2/2, but its passive says... Spells your opponent casts that target a merfolk you control cost 2 more to cast. Abilities your opponents activate that target a merfolk you control cost 2 more to activate. So now if someone wants to use a Path to Exile on one of your merfolk, it's going to be 3 mana instead of 1.
Which, you know, still isn't that bad, but it does set your opponents back a little bit.
Yeah, they're probably going to want to use that on another creature instead that they can still have that extra mana available to them. And also, it's kind of funny because if you have this out and you're fighting as a Zakama and he wants to get rid of your merfolks, he would have to spend an extra 2 mana to cast his activated ability.
Still, adding an extra 2 now makes a very hard decision.
You probably want to get rid of this guy if you're going to really use that much mana. So we already established that we're going Merfolk Tribal, but is there any other ways we can support Merfolk?
Absolutely. Let's go touch up on Tribal support. One of the first cards that we have is Mero Commerce, and it's a 1 and a blue. It's a tribal enchantment merfolk, and it says at the end of your turn, untap all merfolks you control. Now, in a merfolk deck, you get to untap all merfolk you control just for 2 CMC.
This goes into kind of like the Zakama territory where we're untapping things on their opponent's turns. You can do this and have your creatures ready and untap at the end of your turn so that you're not vulnerable to being attacked. So you have your merfolk army ready to defend if they need to. What you probably want to do is before it comes back to your turn, you want to tap them at the opponent's end step so that you can make use of the untapping abilities that Kumena has for free.
This is a must-have card in this deck. It really synergizes well with the tribal theme we're going for here. And also, it gives you so much value, especially like as Ben was just saying right now, at the end of the last opponent's turn, right before yours, you get to just tap for all their abilities. And then here comes the start of your new game right here.
Yeah, so what's cool about this card too is that you can tap it with Kumena's ability because it counts as a regular merfolk.
Such a great card. Let's go ahead and move on to the next one we have here, and that is Deep Root Waters. That is a 2 and a blue. It's an enchantment. Whenever you cast a merfolk spell, create a 1/1 blue merfolk creature token with hexproof. So we're going wide here. And the cool thing about it is that these 1/1 blue merfolks, because you're already going to be casting a lot of merfolk spells, they all have hexproof.
Yeah, it's just giving you more resources to tap when you need it to. You're going to have a bunch of merfolk that you can tap for extra counters and card draw, and this is the way to really get that engine going.
All right, and to top it off, we also threw in Herald of the Secret Streams. He's a 3 and a blue. He's a merfolk warrior, and he has creatures you control with +1/+1 counters on them can't be blocked.
Yeah, it's really easy to get +1/+1 counters on this deck because of Kumena's ability. And if you make them all unblockable, that's going to be your win condition right there. You can just go all in with that.
Such a great card that will help you ramp up really quick and make your board that much more of a threat. So after, let's say you went ahead and attacked because you're all unblockable, you're going to want to have more untapping mechanics to go in with this. So we went ahead and threw in an untapping section for this.
In blue and green, it's really easy to untap your creatures. So in this section, we highlight some of the best untapping cards. One of my favorite creature cards is a Murkfiend Liege. It's 2 and 3 simic mana, so 5 mana total. It's a creature horror 4/4. and his passive says other green creatures you control get +1/+1. Other blue creatures you control get +1/+1. And untap all green and or blue creatures you control during each other player's untap step.
So on top of your creatures getting at the very least +1/+1 and, you know, at the most getting +2/+2, they also gain the ability to untap, which with Kumena can be very disgusting very quick, because now you're untapping during each other player's untap step. So you're going to want to spam your abilities as much as possible.
Yeah, this leaves no room for anyone to attack you. You'll never be defenseless because none of your creatures will be tapped. And it allows you to just reuse their tapping abilities from Kumena whenever you want to. Preferably, like before, you want to do this at the end step so that during the next player's turn, you can just untap them again. Another really underrated untapping card is Quest for Renewal. It's one in a green, and it's an enchantment. And whenever a creature you control becomes tapped, you may put a quest counter on Quest for Renewal. So that's going to be really easy to just ramp up quest counters in this deck, because you're constantly tapping your merfolk. And it also says, as long as there are four more quest counters on Quest for Renewal, untap all creatures you control during each other player's untap step.
Now, I know we talked about these cards that don't benefit you immediately. With the type of deck that we're building here, this Quest for Renewal's quest is actually going to be done very, very quick.
Yes, it's only one and one green, so you could get this out on turn two, and pretty much by turn four or five, you'll be done with this quest. Yeah, this allows you to do basically what Murkfiend Liege does, but on an enchantment. So you always have a consistent engine of being able to untap your creatures. But speaking of engine, I feel like this right here is the MVP of any untapping deck, and that's Paradox Engine. It's a 5-mana artifact, legendary artifact at that. Whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents you control.
I know this card just came out not too long ago, actually. For its price, it is a really great card. If you don't have this in an untapping deck, you need to get one right now.
Yeah, it gets very easy to go infinite with this card with the right board state.
Get your engines running. Speaking of cards that came out just recently, into our next section here, which is Creature Type Matters, we have Vanquisher's Banner. And that is a 5-cost, it's an artifact. As Vanquisher's Banner enters the battlefield, choose a creature type, Merfolk. Creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1. Whenever you cast a creature card of the chosen type, draw a card.
Yeah, since you're going to have a lot of Merfolk anyways, and now they're going to have an extra +1/+1, you're going to be able to draw a bunch of cards every time you just put a Merfolk down.
It's a very cost-efficient card for what it's given you here. Another card that's kind of similar to it would be Kindred Discovery, and that is a 3 blue-blue. It's an enchantment, and as Kindred Discovery enters the battlefield, choose a creature type, Merfolk. Whenever a creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield or attacks, draw a card. So it really synergizes well with this as well, because now whenever you're casting a spell, it's probably going to be Merfolk, so you're drawing a card. And you, with all those tokens you got there, or all the Merfolks you got since you're going wide, when they attack, you're also drawing more cards. So it's an insane amount of card draw that we're going for here.
Yes, and you're just going to keep getting it every turn, especially since all you have is Merfolk. And you could just really synergize with Kumena's drawn ability, and you'll get a bunch of cards in no time.
And that leads us to our next card here, which is the Herald's Horn. It is a 3-cost, it's an artifact, and as Herald's Horn enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creature spells you cast of the chosen type cost 1 less to cast. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. If it's a creature card of the chosen type, you may reveal it and put it into your hand.
Yes, this is actually one of those cards that came out recently as well. Very recently. It was from Commanders 2017.
I think Kindred Discovery was too.
Yeah, so this card allows you to, well, firstly, it's going to make you have a discount on your merfolk creatures. And also, being able to pretty much scry every turn allows you to draw an extra card again.
So these are 3 cards that came out in recent sets, and I feel like are must-haves now in any tribal deck that you're running.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and summarize Kumena. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's really hyped up, and I feel like the hype is justified here. It's also very versatile, like we said, like Zakama, and Now, Merfolk Tribal is in full effect.
I honestly wouldn't be too surprised if this commander is the most popular out of the four.
It probably will be. I mean, as you've seen from the price, it's it's in higher demand than any of the other four.
All right, enough about this popular commander. Let's move on to another amazing commander, and that is Azor the Lawbringer. He is a 2 white-white, blue-blue, legendary creature Sphinx. He comes in at 6-6. He is flying, and when he enters the battlefield, each opponent can't cast instant or sorcery spells during that player's next turn. Whenever he attacks, you may pay X white-blue-blue. If you do, you gain X life and draw X cards.
So right away, you can really see this is going to have to be a control deck.
You know, being in blue and given the passive that he has, I have to completely agree with you there.
Yeah, we built this deck in a very heavy control shell because you have the good single target removal with the white, and you also have the board clears with the white, but you also have the counter spells with blue. So we decided to really just build upon that.
I know control decks are normally frowned upon, but the way that we've built this one, it's actually pretty fun, and I don't think it would really upset many people as if you were just running a bunch of counters.
No, I hate control decks personally because the game gets way too slow and I just want to do all these really cool things, but they don't let me. But this one, when I played with it, it's more fair.
I have to agree. So probably one of the biggest pros about this, as we were talking about, is the board control.
Okay, when Azor hits the board, there's a lot of board control already going on. You have a lot of control over how the game's going to be going, because nobody can use spells or sorceries or instants and sorceries during their turn. This really limits people's abilities to get rid of Azor to just creatures or maybe tapping abilities, like we said before.
So what this is leading you to is giving you a high status on this political game.
And also, when you're in white and blue, I feel like those are the really political colors too, because you can make the most deals with these colors. You're able to persuade other people much easier because you have the tools to do that. You have the board clears or you have the counter spells. At the same time, you could also bluff pretty well with this.
And you know, especially when you're dabbling in blue, you gotta have a good poker face. You have to be able to bluff. Or honestly, if you even have the cards, you can just honestly glow in their face. That's the mindset you have to have at all times. And people aren't gonna want to tackle on it or try to see if you're lying or not. Actually, it's very dependent. They may want to see it or not. They're like, you know what? You have 2 out. I'm gonna attack you anyways.
Yeah, in our play group, they probably will. Yeah, so you know, right now the deck seems kind of mean, or the way that you would want to play Azor. But you know, there's always cons to every commander deck, and with Azor, he has pretty high CMC. It's 6 mana, so that CMC can be really, it'll be tough for anybody to play him in white and blue because those aren't the ramping colors. You don't have green to, you know, carry you through the early game to get him out. Also, at the same time, like we said, it gets very political and nobody wants to cast spells because they don't want to be countered. But if your opponents talk to each other and you know, they make deals of their own, then they're going to start ganging up on you because that's the only way they can get rid of you is if they make sacrifices together. So that happens a lot in Commander, actually, when one person becomes really strong or has this really huge effect on the board. You're going to want to band together and start just using whatever tools you have at your disposal to at least get Azor back to the hand or the command zone.
So, you know, as you're becoming the target from your opponents, friends, enemies, whatever you want to call them, you're going to want to find ways to keep your commander safe. So the first thing we're going to talk about is Flicker and Blinking. First card that we have here is Conjurer's Closet. It's a 5 casting cost. It's an artifact. At the beginning of your end step, you may exile target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control.
This is one of my favorite cards in all of Magic because it's so useful. And for Azor, since his ability is an enter the battlefield ability, so you can do this every end step and keep reapplying the passive where your opponents can't cast instants or sorceries, so you're just locking the game.
But the thing about it is, you know, you can't rely on that alone, so we throw in a lot of cards that do this. Another card that we have here is Deadeye Navigator. It's a 4 blue-blue. It's a creature spirit, and he has Soul Bond. You may pair this creature with another unpaired creature, when either enters the battlefield. They remain paired for as long as you control both of them. And it says, as long as Deadeye Navigator is paired with another creature, each of those creatures has pay one and a blue, exile this creature, then return it to the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, with this you can reuse Enter the Battlefield effects if you want to. You could also dodge some instance and sorceries that would target your commander or whoever you're soulbounded to.
And this is a must-have card here, in my opinion, just because as opposed to Conjurer's Closet where it happens at your end step, this can happen at any moment. Another card that we threw in here is Eerie Interlude. It is a 2 and a white. It's an instant. Exile any number of target creatures you control. Return those cards to the battlefield under the owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Now, with this, you can target your whole board. That's the really cool part about it. But not only that, you'll also be able to dodge board wipes with this. If someone wants to use a Damnation, well, they're going to clear the board. But if you use Eerie Interlude, they don't come back until the end step. So basically, that board wipe happened and you'll have everything back onto the field. And not to mention, their ETB is going to proc one more time.
So you see where we're trying to go with this deck here is we're trying to protect our commander, but we're also trying to take advantage of Enter the Battlefield effects, which leads us to our next subject, which is ETB control.
There's a lot of creatures in Magic the Gathering with ETB effects that also double as control. One of the first cards I thought of was Lavinia the Tenth. It's 3, a white, and a blue, and it's a legendary creature human soldier. It's a 4-4, and it has protection from red. And it says, when Lavinia the Tenth enters the battlefield, detain each non-land permanent you control with converted mana cost 4 or less. So what detained is that until your next turn, those permanents that are detained can't attack or block, and their activated abilities can't be activated. So I put a lot of the detained Enter the Battlefield cards in this deck because I feel like if Azor is coming in and stopping people from using their sorceries and instants, then you're going to have to stop their creatures, and Detain does that very effectively. It's not a very well-used mechanic, and I wish they made more Detain cards because that makes for a really fun control deck where it's a temporary control, so like we were saying earlier, it's not too mean.
Yeah, because, you know, permanent control is disgusting. But if you're giving your opponents at least the chance, or if you're giving them that ray of hope, it's really not that bad, and it's not frowned upon as, you know, hey, get that out of here. Countered!
It's not like we could just counterspell, which I don't think we put any counterspells in this deck. But we're not going to tell people that. We'll just let them bluff. We'll just keep bluffing with our blue mana. Another detained card I like is Azorius Justicar, which is 2 and 2 white. It's a creature human wizard 2/2, and when Azorius Justicar enters the battlefield, detain up to 2 creatures your opponents control. So now this one, you can just pick the 2 biggest creatures that will be giving you problems, and they're basically being useless.
So yeah, unlike Lavinia, this card just gives you much more flexibility on the creatures you want to detain or keep under control.
Yeah, and then we also have a bunch of ETB creatures that come in and exile another creature. So Fiend Hunter is one of them. It's 1 and 2 white. It's a human cleric, 1/3. It says, when Fiend Hunter enters the battlefield, you may exile another target creature. When Fiend Hunter leaves the battlefield, return the exiled creature to the battlefield under its owner's control. So once again, we're talking about temporary removal. All you have to do is get rid of Fiend Hunter and they'll get their creature back. But what's cool about this deck, it's kind of nasty, is that when Azor comes in, they can't use instants or sorceries to get rid of Fiend Hunter, but at the same time, they can't use creatures to block or use their activated abilities because their creatures are detained.
And the fun thing with this is that if you have cards that bounce Fiend Hunter back and forth, you can temporarily exile someone's board, and that kind of puts a bounty on Fiend Hunter. But honestly, I find that to be really funny. I find like this is a really fun card to play. You know, so we're already feeling protected, but just to add that extra tip of the ice here, we threw in a lot of protection cards, which one of the more popular ones is Propaganda. That's a 2 and a blue. It's an enchantment. Creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays 2 for each creature he or she controls that's attacking you.
Yeah, with this out on the board, it's going to be hard for anyone to attack you even if they're not detained or anything, because no one's going to want to pay the extra 2 mana to hit you. Per creature, too.
To add on to that protection, we've also added Authority of the Consoles. It's an enchantment. When creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield, tap. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, you also gain 1 life.
Yeah, so now people can't just start playing creatures with haste and hitting your face. Not to mention, this is only a 1 mana card. So it's very easy to get this out, and it's not any mana that you'd miss. You could put this out turn 1, and it already have an effect on the board, and you just keep getting life. It's only 1 life, but it'll add up.
Especially if they're going wide. Kumena. Another card we added was Teferi's Protection, which is a 2 and a white. It's an instant. And until your next turn, your life total can't be changed, and you have protection from everything. All permanents you control phase out.
So this card came out in Commander 2017 as well in the Vampire deck, and it's actually probably one of the best cards in that set because it gives you 1 free turn to just live and set up for your next turn. And the funny thing about this is, let's say you're doing 1-on-1 with Azor and you're fighting someone else and you just use this card during your turn, they still can't play instants or sorceries on their turn when you pass it back to them, so there's really nothing they can do during their turn when you cast this spell.
I have to agree and say that this card is a great card, especially if you're playing a high cast commander card. You're going to want to do everything in your power to keep it safe, and this pretty much assures it. It's an assurance policy. Speaking of which, something you also need to have in this deck is utility.
Yeah, we put a lot of cards here that don't exactly have a specific section on their own, but they're very useful in decks like this. So, you know, in every End of the Battlefield deck, you're going to need a Panharmonicon. It's a 4-mana artifact, and it says if an artifact or creature entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So basically, your ETB effects go off twice.
And this is a perfect card, especially in a deck that we revolve around mechanics like Detained. So now those 2 creatures that you detained becomes 4 creatures you can detain up in a single card.
Yeah, you just double up on all your ETB control creatures. You can exile an extra creature, you can detain an extra creature. Panharmonicon is a must in this deck. Another artifact we have is actually Mimic Vat. It has imprint. Whenever a non-token creature is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may exile that card. If you do, return each other card exiled with Mimic Vat to its owner's graveyard. And it has an activated ability, 3 and a tap, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that exiled card. It gains haste, exile it at the beginning of the next end step. So what this does is it allows you to, whenever one of your creatures die that has those really sweet control End of the Battlefield abilities, you could just keep reusing it every turn as long as it's imprinted.
I would have to say it goes along the lines with our assurance policy, is if you were to lose a card that you really liked, like one of the detained cards, you now have the ability to keep it on the board as long as Mimic Vat is there.
Yeah, and you know what? Another thing you can do is actually is if Azor dies, you could go ahead and put him into that Mimic Vat, because I don't know if you want to reuse or recast Azor for an extra 2 mana. But every turn, you just pay 3 mana, and no one can use instants or sorceries on their turn.
There's just a lot of options you can do with Mimic Vat, and I think it is a must-have in this deck.
That's why I feel like it's a utility card, because it has a lot of options. And I think one of the most popular blue cards is Cyclonic Rift, and it's 1 in the blue. It's an instant. Return target non-land permanent you don't control to its owner's hand. I guess you could do that sometimes if you're really, really, really desperate. But, you know, if you don't want to, you could go ahead and overload for 6 in a blue and return each non-land permanent you don't control to its owner's hand. So now you're returning all non-land permanents other than yours to their hand.
Yeah, and if you've experienced Cyclonic Rift, you'll never forget it.
You already know what this card is, guys, but it's definitely a must-have in this deck as well.
I feel like Cyclonic Rift is pretty much a must-have for any blue deck you play. It's such a great card, and it really changes the pace of the game and makes everyone hate you, but at the same time, it can make them love you depending on the board state. But let's go ahead and summarize what we talked about here.
So like we said, Azor has a lot of board control. It can be very political, and a lot of people are probably going to hate you. We made this deck with a lot of control, and ETB control specifically, and a lot of protection. It is very tough to replay Azor over and over again, so she needs that protection because he's already a 6-mana card.
As you said, he is a high casting card, but his mechanics are really fun. He's not your typical control deck, and I think that this is a great addition to the Commander game type. But let's move on to the last one, and that is Alenda the Dusk Rose.
So Alenda the Dusk Rose is 2 white and a black. It's the legendary creature Vampire Knight. It's a 1/1, so 4 mana for 1. Okay. It also has lifelink. And whenever another creature dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Alenda the Dusk Rose. When Alenda dies, create X 1/1 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink, where X is Alenda's power.
A 4-cost for 1/1, you're thinking, no. But the cool thing about Alenda, and this goes with one of our pros here, is that you benefit on everyone's turn. So whenever a creature dies, yours or someone else's, she gets that +1/+1 counter.
She comes in as a 1/1, but it gets a lot higher faster than you think, because creatures are always dying, and even on your opponent's turn, when you're not even doing anything, they might chump block or something, and you automatically just get stronger.
You know, just because of her passive, like, you have an easy board state.
It's easy to have a board state with this card, because this is a token deck, and you can just generate so much tokens with this commander. It's easy to really get her buff, and as soon as she's buffed and you kill her, you get just a ton of tokens right off the bat. But the only bad thing about that is you actually have to have her go to the graveyard before you can even get these tokens.
So in this deck, recursion is a must.
Yes, you're going to be playing a lot of recursion here. But at the same time, if someone bounces her or exiles, there's no way you can just say, I'm going to get it back from my graveyard. She loses all the counters that she got, and you got to start back from square one. So you have to be very mindful of that. I did take precautions with that, so there's a lot of sacrificing effects here where you can just dodge these exiles and bouncing abilities.
But let's go ahead and move on to the first part of it, which is recursion. The first card we have here is Shieldred Whispering One. It's a 5 and a black. Shieldred is a legendary creature, Praetor, Swamp Walk. At the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature. She's a 6/6, so she's a big powerhouse, but what's really crazy is that at the beginning of your upkeep, you get to return a target creature card, which will probably be Alenda, more than likely, from the graveyard to your battlefield. And at the same time, you're putting so much pressure on everybody because now they have to sacrifice a creature.
Yeah, and every time they're sacrificing a creature, Alenda's getting stronger too. So it really does the two things that Alenda wants. This is the perfect card for her.
But you know, just to be a little bit more safe with that, we threw in a Gift of Immortality, which is a 2 and a white. That's an enchantment, aura. You enchant creature, and when enchanted creature dies, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. Return Gift of Immortality to the battlefield, attach that creature at the beginning of the next end step.
Yeah, with this, you can just freely say, all right, I'm going to let Alenda die and go to the graveyard, because her and Gift of Immortality will just come back to the board. And this allows it so that you can proc her passive where she's going to sprout all these vampires without having to stay in the graveyard.
It's a definite must-have in this deck, because not only are you having that recursion effect, it's going to force players to use the removal on this enchantment. This is such a great card to have on her because you're just going to be constantly proccing that passive. Another card that we threw in here is Endless Obedience. That is a 4 black sorcery. Convoke. Your creatures can help cast this spell. Each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for 1. Put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. And this is pretty cool for Alenda because when she sprouts all of these 1/1 vampires, you're able to tap them, and just to make Endless Obedience less costed, it'll end up being a black if you have enough. And if you had 2 black creatures out, you can literally pay this for free.
With the Convoke ability and with the way Alenda works, you're going to be able to just tap your vampires for all that mana to cost. So you could actually pay Endless Obedience for free, like Arch said earlier. And there's nothing like getting a creature back straight from the graveyard to the battlefield for free. In this deck, we really want to make a lot of vampires, and the only way to do that is to buff up Alenda. So we have a section called Buffing, where we highlight the cards that we think are a must-have to buff Alenda. One of them is Blade of the Blood Chief. It's an artifact equipment, it only costs 1 mana, and it only equips for 1. Whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on equipped creature. So this doubles up on Elenda's ability where the creature dies, you get a counter. At the same time, if the equipped creature is a vampire, you put 2 counters on it instead. So you could be able to put 3 counters every turn, or every time a creature dies on Elenda.
It's a pretty nasty card, and this is a must-have for this deck. It is a must-have. It's such a low cost, but what you get for it is tremendous.
Yes, you're going to be having so many creatures dying and being sacrificed that you're just going to have a huge Elenda that's just ready to pop. If you really want to get her even stronger, is you want to put a Sun Bond on her, which is 3 and a white, and it's an enchantment. And you enchant the creature, which is going to be Elenda. And the enchanted creature has, whenever you gain life, put that many +1/+1 counters on this creature. Elenda has lifelink, and the vampires she spawns also have lifelink. So if you attack with all of them and her, that's just a lot of life gain, and all the life that you're gaining would just turn into +1/+1 counters.
Just further buffing Elenda and then making her a much more huge threat for when she does get sacrificed.
So another equipment we have that helps buff up Elenda is Nim Deathmantle, and it's 2 mana. It costs 40 equip, but it says equip creature has +2/+2, which is good. It's a good little bonus, but it's also, it gives your equipped creature Intimidate, and it is a black zombie. So what Intimidate does is other creatures can't block unless it's a black creature or an artifact creature. So most often you'd have a huge Elenda just swinging at someone's face for a ton of damage and she won't be able to be blocked. But the main reason I put this card in here is that the second ability is whenever a non-token creature is put into your graveyard from battlefield, you may pay 4 generic mana, and if you do, return that card to the battlefield and attach Nim Deathmantle to it.
So as you can see, we have a lot of these things that really benefit putting our cards into the graveyard, as well as the recursion effect that brings them out. But we're kind of missing the first part, which is actually bringing them into the graveyard. So we have an entire segment here on Sacrifice. And the first card that we have here is Ashnod's Altar, which is a 3 cost. It's an artifact. Sacrifice a creature, add 2 colorless to your mana pool.
Yeah, Ashnod's Altar is a must in a lot of token decks because you have so much free tokens to just get rid of if you want to. And you get a ton of mana out of it. So it kills 2 birds with 1
stone. So obviously you know we had to throw this one in here. Another card that we threw in was Cataclysmic Gearhulk, which is a 3 white-white. It's an artifact creature, has vigilance, and when he enters the battlefield, each player chooses an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker from among the non-land permanents he or she controls, then sacrifices the rest.
Yeah, so with this, you could just choose Elenda, and all of a sudden, everything explodes except for her. Your opponents will also be able to choose 1 creature, but when the dust settles, you're going to have an Elenda that's probably a 20-20, and now nobody wants to even kill her because they'll just make 20 vampires anyways.
Think of it as more of like a controlled Kindred Dominance. But of course, we had to add more. Another card that we added was Eliminate the Competition, which is a 4 and a black. As an additional cost to cast Eliminate the Competition, sacrifice X creatures. Destroy X target creatures.
So with this, you could just sack all your vampires to destroy another creature or any amount of creatures. You're going to have a ton of vampires to sacrifice anyways, so you'd probably clear the board with this. And maybe if you wanted to pop your Elenda, you could just sacrifice her if you wanted.
Now that we got some sacrifice going on, the next thing that we're going to be talking about is token support.
So in this deck, we're going to have a ton of vampire tokens, and this section pretty much helps us buff those tokens. One of the first cards we put in, or I thought of, was Deathbringer Liege. It's 2 and 3 Orzhov mana. It's a creature horror, 3/4. Other white creatures you control get +1/+1, so your vampires are +2/+2. And other black creatures you control get +1/+1. So with these 2 passives, you give Elenda +2/+2 right off the bat. It also says whenever you play a white spell, you may tap a target creature. So now you can, you know, tap peoples who are trying to defend against you. And whenever you play a black spell, you may destroy target creature if it's tapped. So you could destroy that tapped creature if you want, or someone else who attacked recently.
So you could literally pull off combos on yourself if you wanted to. You can cast a white spell, tap Elenda, then cast a black spell, and then destroy her. But you know what? It's very versatile. You have a lot of options with that. So this is a really great card to have here.
Yeah, if you just really want her to die for some reason and reap the rewards, then sure, why not? So we also decided to put Marshall's Anthem into this deck, and it's 2 and 2 white. And it's an enchantment, and it has multi-kicker, 1 and a white. And it says you may pay an additional 1 and a white any number of times as you cast the spell. So automatically, it says creatures you control get +1/+1. So you're buffing your tokens, you're buffing your creatures. That's good. And when Marshall's Anthem enters the battlefield, you can return up to X target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield, where X is the number of times Marshall's Anthem was kicked. So this is recursion, and it buffs up your creatures.
You're able to get multiple creatures out of your graveyard. So every creature they bring out is automatically going to get buffed up to +1/+1. It's a really nice effect to have.
Yeah, and then I think the granddaddy of buffing up creatures in white is Cathar's Crusade, which is 3 and 2 white. It is also an enchantment, and it says whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So this is probably one of the reasons why you really want to pop Alinda, is because once she gets those vampires out, they're going to start triggering Cathar's Crusade, and all of a sudden you're going to have a 10-10, 11-11, and you're going to have a whole bunch of them that people are going to have to block. And they're going to be gaining you life at the same time.
This is a really amazing card. It's actually a card I run in my counter deck, as you know, I've mentioned a few times here. And it's so crazy how quick it is to ramp up your creatures, especially in a token deck like this. Alinda gets sacrificed. Oh, that's game. That's game over for you.
Yeah, not to mention if you play Alinda as well, this will just buff her up too. So you can get her really strong really quick while this is out. And it's a permanent effect. So summarize Alinda. She can go the same way as Kamena, almost. You can either go wide, or you can even make her Voltron and just be super big and go for face and do that commander damage. But the cool thing with her is, if that doesn't work out, you can always have that insurance policy of cashing out on a bunch of vampires.
Yeah, so even if you decide you just wanted to go big, just honestly, you're going to end up going wide. That's just how it works.
That's just inevitable with this deck, is if you decide to go really tall and get her power up to the hundreds, she's just gonna pop and make 100 vampires anyways. So it's a really fun deck.
And with that, that's gonna go ahead and wrap up our Rivals of Ixalan Multicolored Commander review. You know, Rix is bringing a lot to the table for EDH, and honestly, both Ben and I could not be any more excited.
Yeah, these decks are really fun. These commanders are really fun. And I really think that Wizards of the Coast did a great job with them.
And I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty sure we're going to end up buying one of these decks each. I already know.
I'm going to buy one of them, maybe two.
And if you guys want to see us put those into our possessions, you should follow us on social media. You can find us at facebook.com/commandersofthecoast, instagram.com/commandersofthecoast, or even tweet us at commandersotc.
Also, if you want to see the decks that we made here, we actually have a Tapped Out page, tappedout.net/users/commandersofthecoast.
But most importantly, guys, make sure you tap that subscribe button to get notified when a new episode is released. And with that being said, the coast is clear.